This is Creative Careers, Grace Cho. Today I have a great thrill. I have an interview with Eric Paquette. Eric, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Please tell the world what you do.
I am a movie producer, movie and television producer. I also have a tech startup called Let's Screen. And previous to being a movie producer, I was a studio executive nearly my entire adult life in Los Angeles. And prior to that, I was an associate producer at CBS News and a broadcast associate and researcher at CBS Sports, both in New York.
You've held some amazing jobs, dream jobs, many of them.
Well, many, many years ago, I saw an interview on a Charlie Rose show. And Charlie Rose was interviewing a guy named Leonard Stern. Mm-hmm. And he is a New York businessman. I believe the Stern School of Business is named after him. And he said, you should choose as a job something that you would do if you weren't getting paid. And at the time, I was working at First Fidelity Bank in Newark, New Jersey, where I went to college in Boston, and I really wanted to move to New York, and I did move to New York, but I did the reverse commute and had a job in Newark. And then I saw this interview, and I said, you know what? As much as I like banking and business and finance, I don't love it. I wouldn't be doing it if I weren't getting paid. And almost that exact moment, I read a book by this guy named Terry O'Neill, who was a former executive producer of NBC Sports. And after reading that book, I said, that's what I got to do. I want to work in sports. I love sports. I watch sports. I played sports in college. And God, to be able to actually televise and be part of a broadcast unit that presents major sporting events to the world, that would be the best. And I eventually found myself with a job there. You know, and later on in my career, a former boss of mine, Tom Rothman, who's still the current chairman of Sony, he would articulate it differently. And he would say that our vocation is our avocation. And now I get to watch movies for work, for pleasure. When you do something that you would do that is literally your hobby, it never feels like you're on the clock. Mm. So my wife's a screenwriter. I'm blessed to be able to work with her on a number of projects. And when we collaborate together, it's perfect. None of us look at it like, oh my God, I got to go to work. But we're like, let's watch this movie. Let's check out this actor. Let's see if we want to cast this person. How do we adjust the story of this script to get it to its fullest potential? And it's such a thrill to be able to do that. And it's a job. It's not a job. It's a vocation that is my avocation that I can do for the rest of my life. Like literally, I'll never retire. I don't have to. Why would I? It's too much fun.
This is such a great story. I love it. So how did you get here? Like, let's go way back. Right. I know you graduated from BU.
Right.
So what did you major in school? And then what did you want to do back then? And how did you get here?
Right. At the time, I graduated from the School of Management. I was a finance major, and I graduated in the late 80s. And that was when Wall Street was at its pinnacle. Yeah. It was before Michael Milken was taken down, but guys like Henry Kravis and the M&A world, that was the sexiest thing. But what I quickly realized as I went over like 20 in investment banks is that you had to actually go to a certain college, and you have to come from a family of people that are bankers. And it's a pretty spectacular, inequitable aspect of investment banking. And I, Grace, am so blessed to, at this point in my life, to understand that everything happens for a reason.
Completely.
And that the universe
agree.
Is perfect. It's just, in certain moments, it's difficult to fully accept that. But as time goes on, you realize that was supposed to happen that way.
Yeah.
So virtually everything that led to me marrying my wife, who was my best friend, is perfect. Had I been fortunate to get a job at Goldman Sachs or First Boston or Salomon Brothers or whatever the crazy investment bank that existed then that was the job to get as an analyst for 2 years. Then you go get your MBA, then you come back. I would not be where I am today. So I was grateful that one of the places that offered me a job was First Fidelity Bank in Newark, New Jersey. And I was also grateful that I got laid off when super regional banks were having a difficult time during the early 90s. And then it forced me to go, all right, what? I have a clean slate here. I live in Manhattan. What do I really want to do? Right. And that is when I said, well, I want to work at CBS Sports or ABC Sports. And then you start down this journey of just making it happen for yourself. So I eventually connected with this guy named Joe Zappula. And Joe Zappula went to BU, and he was a broadcast associate at CBS Sports. And that was sort of the lowest level of production person, but significant. And they're in charge of all the graphics you see on any sporting event. The BA, or broadcast associate, is responsible for creating them with a technician and having them ready for the broadcast. And so you understand how to televise an event. And I finally got this guy on the phone, and he said, I need a runner in Philadelphia tomorrow for the 76ers Celtic game. And I'm a huge Celtics fan. So I was like, I'm there. So I took a train to the Spectrum in Philadelphia, and I sat with the announcers. I'm literally on the floor, and I got him a hot dog. And that was my job for the game. But I got to see the TV trucks. I got to really understand at a cursory level how a broadcast of a basketball game was carried out. And then I could see individuals that I wanted to be. Like, oh, that guy does that? I want to be that guy. And so I eventually got a job working weekends on the NFL Today in various events, being a logger, literally watching a game and typing out what happens during what time in the game. So that if you had to go back and cut a reel or cut highlight reels, you knew where to go exactly on the tape. And then I eventually got a full-time job as a researcher, making $50 a day, living in Manhattan.
How does that work?
Well, oh, it doesn't really work. Then I had a second job as a bartender.
Right.
In order to survive.
Yeah.
And then you start to look, when you're in an environment where you can see people doing jobs that you want, there are major light bulb moments. And that is one of the things that, you know, I grew up in the projects in Massachusetts, very working class. And I was never really around a lot of people that I would say to myself, that's a job I want.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really want to be a mechanic. There's nothing wrong with being a mechanic, but you're punching the clock and there's not a lot of dreaming, right? Yeah. You do your job, you come home, you wash up because you're dirty, and then you do it again, and then you retire. And I knew that's not what I wanted for myself. I wanted to be at a place when I had options. And that's the ultimate thing, is that when you don't have to do what you don't want to do.
Exactly.
So I then got promoted to what Joe Zappula was doing as a broadcast associate. And I covered the world. I traveled the world covering major sporting events like the Super Bowl, the World Series, the Winter Olympics, the U.S. Open, the U.S. Tennis Open, various big golfing events. And it was fantastic. I just loved it. And I was working with my sports heroes, which was another pretty fun thing. But I then realized that, okay, the producers and directors here, they make a very good living. They work like 3 days a week, and they're never leaving. So I'm going to be stuck in this position, making a little more than $50 a day for a very long time. And I also thought, well, they're not doing anything different than what's been done before. They're just kind of repeating what's been done. And I knew that I was falling in love with storytelling, and I knew that I needed to be in a different environment in order to really hone my storytelling skills. I thought, well, I want to work at CBS News because those are like real journalists who are telling incredible stories. And so at the time, I was a broadcast associate. So then I got a job on the show called 48 Hours at CBS News, but I had to then be a secretary. I mean, they weren't called PAs. They literally called them production secretaries, which was a little bit of a problem, but whatever. And I had to just answer phones.
Right.
Do the grunt work that I was doing 2 years ago. But often you have to take moves that aren't exactly forward moves in order to get ahead a lot. And particularly in creative environments where no amount of schooling, no amount of fancy degrees is going to help you. You got to prove yourself.
Yeah.
Pay your dues. And this was my paying my dues. And fortunately, I was working for a woman named Susan Zirinsky. Oh, no, she was a senior executive there. Later became the president of CBS News. And she was the character that the Holly Hunter character was based on for broadcast news.
Oh, wow.
She taught me more about storytelling, about never giving up, about how to be tenacious as a journalist than anyone ever in my career. Then Connie Chung started a news magazine show that Andrew Hayward was executive producer of 48 Hours. Then Susan Zirinsky became the executive producer of Eye to Eye with Connie Chung. I went there. I got a job as an associate producer. And again, I became the guy that whenever a big story would happen, they would like, okay, put Eric on an airplane and he'll somehow get all of the main characters and Connie Chung will fly in and interview them.
Mm.
And I did that for a couple of years and it was a tremendous experience. But I had another light bulb moment that whenever this guy named Jeff Sagansky would call, Susan Zirinsky would sprint to the phone. And I was like, who the hell is Jeff Sagansky? And someone would say, oh, he's the president of entertainment. And I thought, I need to be that guy. And I didn't even know what that meant. And when you're young, you unfortunately just think about how do I get to the next level? You never really enjoy the moment. I mean, I have a complete different philosophy on life and on careers now than I did in my early 20s. And I think many people, when they're in their early 20s, you're just constantly trying to get ahead, which is a bit misguided. Nonetheless, I studied what entertainment was. And they're the folks that run the primetime lineup, which is the revenue-generating engine of a network. And I then started flying out to LA. Because I was an associate producer at CBS News, I could pretty much get a meeting with anybody. And I wasn't shy about asking. Because if I'm the guy that goes and gets all the interviews for Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding, or O.J. Simpson, I'm certainly not going to be sheepish about trying to get a network head on the phone. So
right.
I would line up these interviews with presidents of everything. And then I would get them to give me recommendations on five people who they think I should contact. And that's what everyone should do. If you manage to get an interview or a Zoom with someone, get 3 to 5 names from them. So now I'm contacting people at the recommendation of presidents. So then suddenly your network becomes gigantic. And I eventually got a job at CBS Entertainment as an executive in training, as hired by a guy named Leslie Moonves.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know who Leslie Moonves is.
Oh, yes.
And it lasted 6 months. I moved to LA. I quit my job at CBS News, moved to LA, had this job. And he literally put me in a cubicle outside of his office.
Oh, dear.
Right. And because I had this Susan Zirinsky work ethic, I would get in at 6 a.m. and I'd leave at midnight.
Oh.
And in news, that's what you do.
Right.
Because effort equals results, especially when part of what you had to do was find stories. So I was always there when he arrived. I was always there when he left. Bad. Right? Because you want to get out of the earshot, the eye shot of the person who runs the network. And then he would say to me, oh, Paquette, if I'm not around, you can use my office in my conference room. You can sit on my couch. You can. And again, no one said, don't do that. So I was constantly using his office and he was constantly kicking me out. And then finally, I'll never forget this. His number two guy at the time was a guy named Billy Campbell.
Mm.
And when someone would call you internally, you'd see their names on your phone. and I get a phone call from B. Campbell, his assistant. Billy wants to see you. And he's like, yeah, it's just not working out. Leslie doesn't like you. So you have 2 weeks. And so from that moment until the 2 weeks, I'd pass Moonves in the hallways and he'd give me the evil stare. And oh, it was awful. I'll never forget. This was at Beverly Boulevard, you know, CBS Television City. I'm walking around the farmer's market thinking to myself, oh my God, what the hell am I going to do?
Oh.
I just moved here from New York. I had this great job and now I just got fired. I'm over. I'm done. Whenever that happens in your life, it is so for the right reason. But you never know. You don't possibly
not
know
at the moment,
time.
No.
Not at the moment. You're like, but you know what? But more people as a society, as educators, need to help students and people with their mental health. Help them with their mindset.
100%.
Help them understand problems in a different way. Like, there's none of that. There are courses in almost everything except mindset. But if you look at all the most popular podcasts, it's all mindset. Daily Living, you know, Wayne Dyer, Daily Stoic. It's all part of the same thing. And now I listen to all those.
So true.
And now I'm literally impenetrable. Like, anything can happen to me. And it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yes.
Matter. In fact, I'm grateful for obstacles in the road because I just get better at it. And so, especially when you're starting new things, no one is ever going to land a haymaker. It's just not going to happen. There's barely glancing blows. Barely. But in my mid-20s, I was like, oh my God, I'm flattened by this.
It's when you think back, it's
such, oh my God, you don't, because young people aren't trained to deal with adversity.
Correct.
They're not, because you're just like, you're just going from one job to the next. And how do I get this promotion? How do I use this person to help me get this job? And then especially Hollywood, when you're just bombarded with people getting giant jobs, and that's all you want to get. Instead of just being the best version of yourself, period. That's it. And detaching yourself from outcomes.
I love what you just said. Being the best person.
Or being the best version of you. That's it. And of course, being the best person is absolutely part of that. And somebody with integrity and judgment and empathy and wanting more for you than I want for me. I didn't live my life like that in my 20s because it was just me, me, me. Okay, yeah. Now I don't have a job. Leslie Moonves just fired, most powerful guy at the time in Hollywood, just fired me. Whoa, what am I going to do now? So then you go, you regroup. And I said, you know what? I don't want to get a job that I shouldn't have. Like, I shouldn't have had that job. Should have been an assistant and learned. But I got a job as an executive in training. And everyone knew that I wasn't qualified for it. Like, he'd give me scripts and I'd give him my honest opinion without really thinking, okay, who's the writer? How does he feel about this project? And so I then started researching people who were the best mentors because that's what I needed. I needed a mentor.
Mm.
Needed someone who was going to show me the ropes. And there was a guy that named Mike Medavoy, who's still a friend, who I had read like all these people. Jeffrey Katzenberg, Lucy Fisher, all like giants in our business, worked for him.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, he must be doing something right. I need to work for him. And I eventually got a job working for him.
Wow.
I was his assistant. So now I'm like an assistant again. and my friends in New York would call like, dude, who the hell is Mike Medavoy? And why are you answering his phone? What are you doing? Because I was an associate producer with Dan Rather and Connie Chung. And now I'm like, Mike Medavoy's office. Like, what the hell? But it's what you got to do. You got to do it. And I needed to do it, especially after what I just went through. And I did that for like a year and a half. Got promoted a bunch of times. And I was executive vice president or something like that. But I learned more about filmmaking, more about filmmakers than any other point in my entire life.
Wow.
Because Mike, to this day, loves movies. Loves movies. Loves movies, loves politics. And that's how I, that was the first taste of, wow, I can actually get involved politically. And I did, eventually becoming a member of President Obama's finance committee and Joe Biden's finance committee and helping Mayor Garcetti, et cetera, et cetera. That's a whole other conversation. But I learned all that from Mike. His projectionist, Jim Cushman, every Friday morning at 6 a.m. on the Sony lot, his office was, he had a deal at Sony and his office was right outside of the Sony lot, would show me a classic movie. And that was sort of educating this knucklehead from Fall River, Massachusetts about what good movies look like, what good filmmakers look like, what great stories are like. And Mike would also do this at his house. He had a screening room at his house. And I thought, oh my God, this guy's got a screening room at his house. How cool is that? And he would get first run movies and do dinner and a movie and have friends over and watch movies. Well, I thought, oh, I'm going to do that one of these days. And, you know, and now I have a screening room at my house and there I do the go. Same thing. And it's the best. It's just the best. My wife and I and friends, we cook dinner, we watch whatever movies in the theater. It doesn't get any better than that, for at least for me. So did that for Mike, left that job, went to MGM, was at MGM for a few years, and then they got bought out by a private equity company. And then I left there and I went to Sony where I was for 15 years.
Wow.
And then I left Sony right at the beginning of the pandemic to launch a direct-to-consumer platform and to produce on my own. And I've been doing that for 2 years and I've never been more creatively fulfilled in my life.
Well, isn't that the key?
And part of the reason is that I don't have to accept no. And when you're a studio executive, unless you're the guy that or the woman that occupies the largest office on the lot, of which there are five of them in the world, and how one gets there, it's a whole other podcast.
I would like to do that one.
But unless that's your job, you have to accept no. So you can say, I have this idea. It's called The Conjuring. Let's make this movie. No, 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 no. And now I don't have to do that. So I have 30-something projects, and they come to me from all over. And I don't accept them as a producer unless it's something that I know I will eventually get made. And half of them are true stories. Now, if you said to me, you have an unlimited amount of money to just make movies that you want, I'd make two kinds of movies. Character-driven thrillers that have an emotional core and inspiring true stories.
Right.
Period. Because people in our world need to know that if you quit, you never know how close you came to winning. And sometimes you need to see people in real life that, oh my God, Colonel Sanders went through all of this before he became Kentucky Fried Chicken. God, the stuff that I'm dealing with in my life, that's nothing compared to that. And the collective we as a Hollywood community need to spend more time bringing content into being that can inspire people.
100,000% agree.
And less time on things that you know are just going to make money. Now, it's a business, of course, but I think that there needs to be a little more of a focus on what you put into the universe. You know, as much of a fan of certain horror movies that I am, some of the horror movies that are put out into the universe what do they do to society except making money for people that release those movies? I just don't get it. I don't get half of them. It's like, really? You want to put that out there? I mean, mental health today is a big issue. Let's not give people ideas. Let's not do that. Now, I'm responsible for some of those movies, but as a father of two young ladies, and I have complete control over what I put out there, I spend a hell of a lot more time trying to put stories out there that about people that overcome a certain adversity to get to a place at the end where they're completely fulfilled.
Oh,
whether it's a thriller or a true story, but not about a bunch of people. I just killed people. And I'm just not going to do that. I don't need to do it.
Do you know how long I've been saying this about Hollywood? Why couldn't they be more balanced?
I'll tell you why. Because people, the five or six people, you know, it's about keeping that job as long as you possibly can.
Yeah, well.
And that means being risk averse. And that means leaning into things that you know work. You know, just tell a really good story. Tell a well-made story. Like, I watched Super Mario Brothers over the weekend.
Yeah.
Right? It's original. It has unexpected moments. It's about characters that you care about. And there's a strong emotional through line. Right? Now, if you put that formula into any script, you're going to have a movie that's going to work. Period. That's it. And Donna Langley and Chris Meledandri at Illumination, every single movie they make has that formula.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? It's a blockbuster out of thin air, out of Donkey Kong and Super Mario Brothers, this game that Nintendo created 40 years ago. They have one of the biggest movies of all time. That's it. And how do you feel when you finish watching that movie? Like, I want to scream the highest mountain, and I did it on my Instagram, and tell people, watch this movie.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
And am I the audience for Super Mario Brothers? Hell no. It's families. It's a four-quadrant movie. But I'm the audience for anything that's good. Period.
Human stories, for me, are the best.
Right. I'm with you.
But what I find remarkable about your life is, especially now, you're finding purpose. And you said you want to give back.
Right.
With the work that you do.
Right.
And it's very much like myself. Why do I do this? I want to give back. Mental wellness is emotional wellness is something that is very, very important to me and my team.
Oh, good for you.
And art is one way that they could find a moment of respite.
Right.
When they look at something that they enjoy. And you're doing that with movies.
Look, when you live a life of purpose and meaning, what will happen to you? Happiness and joy. That's it.
Exactly.
It's simple. Too many people make it way too complicated.
We're all human. We like right. the same things. We want to be happy.
It's not about being better than anybody else. Just be better than you used to be.
Well, so everything you're saying is just so powerful, so helpful. It's for everyone. But it's very, very sharp in the sense that it's very extra acute. Now, do you think that's because you went through that Hollywood? I mean, I find Hollywood to be, it's not my favorite place in the world. I have to admit.
No, it isn't because, it's because I intentionally work on myself.
Mm.
It's just, all this stuff doesn't happen. And I tell this to people. I get up very early. I meditate. And this is my routine. And everyone should have some routine. It's crucial. Get up early. Meditate. I read something that has an impact on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Go for a run. If it's a garbage run where I don't have to run a certain pace, I listen to some podcast. Come home. Cold shower. Make your bed. Start work, right? Before I start my day, before I get in front of my computer to start work, I am up 5-0, 5-0. It is impossible for me to lose the day. Doesn't happen. So by the time I go to bed at night, put my head in my pillow, I've won. I've won my day. And that's the key. And then I start all over again. And lo and behold, I won another day.
I think that's the best piece of advice I've ever heard, honestly.
Well, and it's just about daily effort. You don't set out to win an Oscar because it will never, you will be forever unfulfilled. Just set out to be the best you every single day. And that's it. And stuff is going to happen.
Stuff will happen, exactly.
Have faith. That's part of it.
Oh my goodness, that's my favorite expression. Have faith. And you know, the other word that you wrote, you said, which is always my favorite word, is be grateful.
Oh God, it works.
It does work.
It works. And then you become, eventually, when you really work on yourself, as I said earlier, it's almost impossible for something to knock you off your stride. And then you find yourself really spending a lot of time helping other people.
Exactly.
Who don't have the benefit or confidence in seeing things that way. And that's a beautiful thing, right?
It's a hugely beautiful thing. And I love the fact that you shared with us the story of, you know, the successes, but also those massive rejections, supposed failures.
Like, you want those things. There's no such thing as failure. There's no such thing as losing. They're just moments. They're just moments in time that end up being solid building blocks.
Well, you know, I'm in a business with artists, constant rejection.
Right.
Right. Perhaps, you know, not as bad as showbiz, maybe just as bad, but it is constant. Why isn't my art selling? Why don't they like my work? I do this for years and years.
Right.
So we deal with a lot of that. And I've always wanted to address how to view those experiences in a positive way. And you've shared your story. It is so moving and pertinent.
Well, a dear friend of mine is an artist named Chaz Guest.
Mm.
And I met Chaz at a mutual friend of ours' house, this guy named Ted Sarandos, who runs Netflix. And it was a fundraiser. We completely hit it off. And he's like, you want to see some of my stuff? I'm like, what do you mean some of your stuff? So, because I had no idea who he was. So he takes me around Ted and Nicole's house. And he's like, oh, that's my painting. Oprah just had me paint that. And, oh, Barack Obama had me. And they had like 10 of his paintings.
Mm.
And he's a guy that was a former gymnast, former martial artist, living in Manhattan, and just wanted to paint. He had children, and he painted, and he painted, and he painted. And now he's one of the most significant contemporary art painters, where Julian Schnabel's son represents him in New York. And
yes,
I'm making a movie based on one of his characters. So the lesson really is that you're capable of doing anything in life. Just don't quit. Don't ever quit. And it's easier said than done. But you can literally achieve whatever you want, except one thing. Except one thing.
What's that?
You show up to the airport and your flight has been canceled. You are not turning that around. It's not happening. No amount of sweet talking you can do can turn
that
around.
That's one of those moments.
That's it. Just accept it. I'm okay with accepting that. But Grace, if you said, I want to be the next United States Senator for the great state of California, I would say go for it. Just make it happen. Anyone out there, whatever they imagine for themselves, just do it. So long as it's, you know, within the framework of a country of laws, et cetera.
Have you ever thought about politics?
You know what? I have a great many friends that have various positions in our society.
Yeah. I know you have very powerful friends.
For this moment, I am very happy in supporting candidates that share my view of our country. My hat's off to people that dedicate their lives to making our lives a better place.
Got it.
Unfortunately, many of them are just motivated by keeping their job, and that's a problem.
That is a bit of a problem, isn't it? So are you working on something now that you would like to share with the world?
Yes, I just wrapped a movie that I shot. I made it for 3 months in Malta.
Very nice.
That takes place in Boston, one of my favorite cities in America. I finally have a movie that's set there, and I end up shooting in Malta.
Oh, gosh.
It's because there's a great tax rebate, and spending 3 months in this beautiful Mediterranean country wasn't the worst thing in the world. But it's a terrific character-driven thriller that stars Joel Kinnaman and Mark Strong and Sandra Mae Frank, and it's about a recently deaf cop and a deaf witness that have to survive the night in an apartment building with a bunch of corrupt cops trying to get them.
What's the title of the movie?
It's called The Silent Hour.
The Silent Hour.
Right.
And when is that going to be released?
Well, it was made independently, which means you make the movie, and then when the movie's finished, you sell it to the most appropriate place to release it. So we haven't done the selling part yet. So we will see, and I'll let you know when that happens.
Excellent. I have to ask you, I'm a big fan of Hitchcock movies.
Right.
Hitchcock is always seen in one scene of his movies.
Right.
Walking the dog or sort of walking by.
I literally am in like four scenes. So not to my dismay, the director kept saying, let's just have Eric be the bartender. So we'll see.
He did it. That's good.
Let's just hope it's not so obvious that like, who the hell is that guy who keeps showing up? But I actually did not like it, to be honest.
He's
like, oh, we need a Boston bartender. Let's just have Eric be the Boston bartender. But the problem with it is as a producer, when you're watching a scene shot, you're focusing on what the actors are saying.
Yeah.
And when you're in the movie, you're just listening to your cue. You're not necessarily listening to how the actors are performing the scene.
Right.
So it was a bit disjointed for me. I don't like it at all. So
interesting.
Right. So I had to actually watch dailies of that day to understand what was going on. Whereas every other day, I'm sitting right there with the director and I know what's happening.
You enjoy being behind the scenes.
Oh, much better.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time. I would love for you to come back and tell us this, part two of your political life. I'm kind of curious about that.
Ah, you got it. No problem at all. I'm happy to.
Eric, thank you very much.
Okay, be well.